Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Trampoline Hall podcast. I'm your host, Misha Globerman. Trampoline Hall, as you probably know by now, is a lecture series. It takes place in a bar. That bar is in a city. The city is usually Toronto, but sometimes it's another city. People give lectures on all kinds of subjects. The one rule of Trampoline Hall is that the speakers cannot be professionally expert on the topic on which they are lecturing. After each lecture, we take questions from the audience. If you have questions for us on the podcast, we'd love to hear from you. If there's things you'd like to know about Trampoline Hall or about the podcast, or really, I'll say about anything. If there's anything at all you want to know, get in touch with us. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook and just on the web in general, and send your questions along to us, and we'll try to answer them on the podcast. Robin Elliott posted on Facebook, and she wanted to know, she talked a little bit about the Q&A and the sound quality of the Q&A, and she wanted to know if we were going to start using microphones in the audience. If you listen to the show, you know that we record the Q&A on the podcast, and sometimes it's hard to hear because we're in a bar full of people shouting across the bar. And we do our best to record it. And sometimes it doesn't come through super clearly. And so Robin Elliott contacted us on Facebook to see if we might consider actually using microphones and miking the questions from the audience. It's a great idea, but we're not going to do it. And I'll tell you why. The main reason is that I think when we've been doing Trampoline Hall for a long time, and that show that happens in a bar is part of a is part of the real world and is part of a community. And I think when we started doing the podcast, I think one of the things we felt really strongly about was we didn't want to change what we were doing in the show. We didn't want the podcast to change what we felt was special about Trampoline Hall, about the live show. And we didn't want to turn the audience of Trampoline Hall into a sort of studio audience for a broadcast. And I think that we all felt that passing a mic around would change what the show was like and make it less like the thing that we had come to love over the years. So the result is a recording that's kind of quirky and kind of lo-fi and kind of hard to hear at times. And our hope is that for you, the listeners, that there's some pleasure in that and that we haven't given you the thing that's sort of polished and perfect and easy to listen to. And that's what Trampoline Hall is. And so that takes us to our lecture. The topic is The Perfect Veal Sandwich, and the lecturer is Gabe Gonda.
Yeah, can you make it up there? Yes, I can do that. Okay.
Thanks, Misha. Thanks for inviting me, Sheila. It's an honor. I'm a virgin in the lec biz, so bear with me. I'm happy to be a warm-up act for Mark and Linda, the sacrificial calf, as it were, which is karmically apt since I've eaten so much veal in my life. So I guess it's a slight subject, the perfect veal sandwich. It doesn't sound like much. And actually, as I started to think about it, and my wife suggested the subject, it turned out to me that I don't think it's that difficult to articulate what makes a perfect veal sandwich. I'll try to do it a little bit later. What's more difficult for me, or what was more difficult for me in thinking about it, was trying to articulate why I'm so attached to veal sandwiches, why they figure so large in my imagination. And so I'll try to give you a bit of a brief kind of accounting of my life to explain why it is they have this outsized place in my imagination to this day. And so I'll begin in grade seven. The first day of grade seven was a very fateful day, as often happens in our lives. By events just completely out of our control, our lives are sent into directions we couldn't have anticipated. And that was a day like that for me. I started in Mrs. Hansen's grade seven homeroom class at Winona Drive Senior Public School. And the boy beside me was a boy named Adrian Morello. Adrian Morello was everything I was not. I was tall, and he was short. I had pimples. He did not. He could execute a perfect ollie on a skateboard. I could not stand on a skateboard. He probably had sex with grade 8 girls. I might have been caught masturbating by grade 8 boys. So we were very different. And in one area in particular in which we were different was that he was richer than I was. So he always had more lunch money. So I had $5. That was my my lunch stipend. And I went across the street to the corner store, the variety store. And there that $5 went a very long way. I could get 2 Jamaican beef patties, a Dr. Pepper, and a bag of salt and vinegar chips, which is a pretty good layout for $5. But if you had $5.75, you could go down to Davenport and Ossington to Mama's, the Portuguese bakery, and you could get a veal sandwich. And now that, I mean, whether or not that was a distinguished veal sandwich, I'll leave aside for the moment, although Mama's is no longer a going concern. So $5.75, a steaming hot pile of Kaiser and meat and mushrooms and sauce. And this was like, this was a status. This was a ticket in seventh grade at Winona Drive. This was I mean, today it's probably an iPhone 4G, but at Winona Drive, it was this sandwich. It was, if somebody said to you, yo, guy, let's get a veal, it was like saying, you're in a very special club. So my first memory of this veal thing is about status. It's about wanting to be included in something I wasn't, a longing for something I couldn't have. But I think that's only one layer of it. And so for the second layer, I'll go further back to kind of proto-history. And I'll describe my father's early life briefly. My father was born in December of 1941 in Nazi-occupied France. And according to family lore, he could not eat anything but sardines and canned or tinned, what is it, powdered milk for the first 6 months of his life. So the family got out. They went to Switzerland. They lived out the war there. And in 1950, they went to America. They left protein-deprived post-war Europe for the land, that sort of the land of the dawn of the food industrial complex, the age of the food industrial complex. And my dad describes in vivid detail getting to Queens, New York in 1950 and having his first hamburger. And he describes sitting on a curb in Queens outside a diner and the grease kind of running down his forearms. And for him, this is like the beginning of in my family, was like an obsession of his with meat sandwiches. Like, he's still a stick figure, but he can eat like 15 sandwiches a day. Now, my mother was from the New York area. She was from New Jersey, and she's Italian-American. So she grew up in this milieu, this cauldron of, you know, marinara and sausage and peppers and meatballs and veal. So if you're trying to kind of create a sort of a template for my ur-veal obsession, my mother, you could say, is the content, and my father's the form. The content is Italian-American cuisine. The form is this sort of hungry European refugee. So my dad, though, he teaches philosophy at York, and he thinks he knows a lot. One thing he claims to know is that veal parmigiana sandwiches, as they're called, are a local Toronto delicacy. His assertion is that you can't get a veal sandwich in New York City. You get a chicken cutlet, you can get an eggplant parm, you can get a sausage sandwich, you can get a meatball sandwich, but a veal parmigiana sandwich is actually a Toronto delicacy. It's unsupported. I can't challenge it. I'll leave it at that. What we can say, I think, with a relative degree of certainty is that veal parmesan sandwiches, whether they're a Toronto delicacy or not, are not an old world food. Despite the name, there's nothing Parma-like about a veal parmesan sandwich. It's of note that the people who ate these sandwiches, the people among whom they flourished, the Calabrian and Sicilian and Neapolitan construction workers of the post-war era, these guys, they were eating an American food. And it's connected very much to this age of, you know, post-war flourishing of the food industrial complex that my father was enjoying when he had that first hamburger. And this brings us to a sort of second dimension of the discussion about veal, which is the ethical political dimension, which is a troubling one. Because many people think veal is disgusting. The mere idea of it. the mere thought of it is repugnant to so many people. And I cannot empathize with them, but I can sort of sympathize with them. I can understand from a distance what they mean. So another episode from my personal history, grade six, end of the school year, end of 6 years at Palmerston Public School, French immersion, giddy to get out of class. It's springtime. It's a beautiful day. We're sitting in the classroom, and outside the window, a cow goes running by, like a real live fucking cow. And it's escaped, apparently, from the abattoir up at St. Clair and Keele. This is like a totally electrifying event in the life of the grade six class at Palmerston Public School. It was awesome. And I just thought it was a wonderful spectacle. Now, this class was full of the first sort of the vanguard of West Annex or Seton Village gentrifiers. This is 1986 or 7, right? So these are all kids whose parents teach at U of T or York. Many of them are left-leaning. And so it was a politically galvanizing event for our class. This girl named Jessica Hay immediately sparked a petition to try to, you know, save the life of this cow. Now, I don't know if it did any good. I don't know what happened to that cow. We may all have had a hand in eating it. But it did a huge amount for Jessica because apparently she never ate meat again. Now, I just liked the show. I'm a journalist. She's a psychologist. You guys do the math. But history was on her side. It was at that same time in North America that the veal industry, the meat industry, began to come under really effective scrutiny by activists, right? This was a time when people became on a mass level aware of the fact that baby cows were kept in these horrible little hovels, pumped full of hormones and antibiotics. And let me consult my notes here for a second. And really ill-treated. And it turns out that it was a real turning point in the life of the North American calf, because at that time in the United States, only about 7% of veal came from what are called free veal. These are veal who are allowed to roam in a pasture and eat from their mother's milk. And now, today, it's about 35%. So the campaign that began in the era of Jessica Hay's great petition has actually borne some real fruit. The problem, though, with the veal that you get that's not treated really badly is that it's tough. It's called red veal, and it's called red veal because it's not tender. It doesn't have that ineffable veal-like quality of being almost resistanceless. Which brings us to the subject of the lecture, which is, as I acknowledged at the outset, an ugly one. Is there such a thing as a perfect veal sandwich? I mean, again, the idea to many is repugnant. But if you accept, you know, as a Platonist would, that there are forms to all things, that anything can be perfectible, then I think it's not a leap to suggest that even a repugnant, a morally indefensible veal sandwich can be perfectible. So, to wit, I'll describe what I think a perfect veal sandwich doesn't include. It doesn't, like the one at St. Lawrence Market, it definitely doesn't have cornmeal on the bun. That's for the mungie kicks. It doesn't have sauce from a can. It doesn't have gristly meat. It isn't left in a pan for too long. It doesn't have too many condiments. Now, I had a veal sandwich, I'll confess, last night with my dad watching the Super Bowl. And it was from California's. California's is the sort of the local emporium. It's the acknowledged source of the perfect veal sandwich. So I'm offering you the radically conventional wisdom in Toronto on what a perfect veal sandwich is. Now, California's gives you a Kaiser that's soft, but chewy, not baguette chewy, just chewy enough. The tomato sauce is like a Marzano marinara. It's sun sweet, but it's not, you know, it's not white sugar sweet. The peppers are sautéed in olive oil, and they have a slow kind of heat. The veal, as I say, is kind of this ineffably buttery stuff, and it's terrible because the veal's texture is like a metaphor for its sad little life. It provides zero resistance to the teeth, the way that these poor creatures provide zero resistance to their captors. But I have to say, I've never been a politicized eater. I'm not a Jonathan Safran Foer devotee. I just enjoy food. I mean, that veal sandwich went down last night in like a blur of hands and God knows what else in about 30 seconds. But the truth is, I'm not someone who eats these things all the time. And in my private life, I've moved a bit away from you know, junk food and veal and things like that. At home, we have two boys. We don't, you know, we try to bring nitrate-free meat into the house. When I was in my prime, I had a girlfriend who lived at Palmerston in college. And so I would walk to the Californias down at Claremont, and I would eat two veals in a go. I mean, that's like 2,200 calories, right? That's enough for most male adults on this planet don't get that many calories in a day. So I don't eat, I maybe eat a red meat once a week now. But the power of these sort of, these familially rooted foods, these foods that have a hold on our kind of our whole person is very strong. I took my 3-year-old boy, he was then three, a couple years ago, and my dad to California for Father's Day. It was, I think, 2008. And it was closed. California was closed. So we made our way up to San Francisco's at Clinton and Gore, which is a sort of sad little cousin of California's. My dad and I got a veal, and Charlie got a bun with some sauce on it. I wasn't ready to inflict the whole thing on him quite yet. And we sat on the curb. There was sauce sort of dribbling, you know, reminiscent and such. And so I kind of I'm curious to know in his life what will be Charlie's veal. That's done.
Gabe Gondas, ladies and gentlemen.
You're listening to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, the Q&A.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Are there any questions? Oh, yes, you, ma'am. You in the back. Yes. The free-range veal is called red veal.
What color is this?
It's like a beige. It's beige, which is an app, right? It's a non-color color.
It's the color of the veal, the regular veal color. Are you vegetarian? Do you not eat veal, or?
I don't think I've ever had.
You've never had veal?
I don't think so.
Are you persuaded to? Does this make you?
No. Sandwiches are really good.
It is a delicious sandwich. Anything else people would like to know? Yes, you, ma'am, yes.
So, is there Parmesan in the sandwich?
Is there Parmesan in the sandwich?
I left out a lot. In the breading, there should be a bit of Parmesan cheese, and it should be flash fried. In the breading, there should be a little bit of Parmesan cheese, yeah. And it provides salt, I think.
Good, all right.
I've never made one.
Yeah, all right. Yes, yes, you, ma'am, yes.
So I had it? Oh, yeah, for sure.
So just for those who didn't hear, the assertion was that San Francesco, I'm sorry to make it sound like a girl sandwich place, that San Francesco was the sandwich of choice in this woman's day, but nowadays when things are all topsy-turvy, it's California. And the question is why?
And with respect to San Francesco, which made a great veal sandwich in the 80s, especially the one, there was one at Queen and Bathurst, and there was one on the Corso Italia, close to Caledonia and St. Clair. You know, I think veal, if it's If it works, has to be a volume operation. The reason that California's is great is because they churn out so many. If the kitchen's at rest, I mean, food tends to not to be good. And it's California's, I think, had a kind of a volume operation that was unstoppable. It's sort of it's the local Walmart of veal, right? To be like even more villainous about
it. We were missing a dimension of evil in there. You're like, how can we make it? What else can we compare? What else can we make it
there's
horrible?
There's got to be a T-shirt in this.
So that makes sense. Okay, so yeah, I remember that place at Queen of Bathurst was
yeah,
really
it's
nice.
Where the pizza is.
Goddamn
yeah,
pizza pizza.
Yeah, I know. And it used to be really good.
Where they also make things really fast, but not so delicious. Yeah. Okay. Yes, you ma'am, yes.
What did your mom eat last night when you and your dad?
What did your mom eat when your dad were eating meaty sandwiches?
I left this out.
That's an awesome question.
I left this out. My mom in the 80s when Jessica Hay was getting that petition going, gave up meat. And my parents are divorced. My mother likes women. So that's, we can leave that for another lecture. She's interestingly since also left vegetarianism behind. So she's kind of she's returned to meat eating.
But not to men. She's
not to men. No, as far as I know, it's not. I don't really ask.
Fair enough. Okay, so the answer is probably that you don't know what your mother. Because she wasn't watching the Super Bowl.
It was just me and my dad. They're divorced. So my mom, it's worth thinking about. She made that white bean and kale casserole that's number 3 on the Times most emailed list right now. She did. No, I know it's true, and it's in our fridge. It's actually quite good.
When she made it like off. Okay, first of all, it's on the Times most 3 emailed recipes.
Yeah, no, it's on
the most 3 emailed things of all that. Like, there's
you got
like
David Brooks, Hosni Mubarak, white beans and kale.
That's amazing! Wow. And so she was like, because she follows the news.
I guess I think my wife emailed it to her. I don't know. It was going around.
Is that true?
The kids did not like it.
Kids hate it. You know why kids hate it? Because it's got kale and white beans in it. It's a terrible
thing. Get the green out.
Yeah, because they know the truth. Children do.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So the answer is we don't know, but maybe she was eating the most popular food in Western media. Right. Among
flash in the pan, I would offer, but we'll see.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. It doesn't seem like it's going to last. That's the thing about the news is they always focus on like what's big today, but they don't
exactly.
See the. What's important in the long
exactly.
term. Anything else that people would like? Yes, you ma'am, yes.
Given what we know of your dad, why wouldn't he spring for the extra 75 cents to
why wouldn't your dad give you this money, that the 75 cents you need to have a good lunch instead of having to eat patties?
I don't think, that's a good question. I don't know. That's cheap.
Did you ask him?
No, I think I had a set allowance, and I think most of it went to comic books. And I think like the lunch money was just sort of leftovers, so I think... I didn't prioritize it right. I hadn't straightened out my values yet at that age, so I was still more into comic books than food.
Yes, you, sir.
Yeah, between the red veal and the beige veal, what are the digestive differences?
What are the digestive... Now, when you say the digestive differences between the veal, do you mean that digestives for Gabe or for the veal?
No, for Gabe.
Oh, so how are they different to digest?
Yeah.
I don't know that I don't know. That's a good question. I'm not sure. I don't know. It probably depends on the rest of your diet. No, I'm serious. Like, I don't.
What would affect that?
I think if you have like the kale and white beans, half the time you're probably gonna. Either way, you can
digest anything if you have all that stuff, right? But let's say the rest of what you eat is those little potatoes that you get in Little Portugal. That's all you eat. You eat those all week, and then once a week you have a veal sandwich.
I mean, it depends on your constitution, but I don't like your chances in that case.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. So you think they're about the same? They're similar.
I would guess they are similar
to digest. Okay, great. You, ma'am, yes.
You made it sound like you didn't think California's was the best veal sandwich in town.
Is California's the best veal sandwich in town?
I think it is. But I actually have gotten lazy. Like there was an age in my life where I would have actually gone to if somebody said, "Oh, there's a great veal at like this strip mall in Etobicoke," I would have gone. I don't have as much disposable time, so I can't like with real authority say it does have. There are 10 of them now. The one at Claremont you got to go to because in the back. Like there's others that are kind of in the suburbs, but the one on Claremont, there's a bunch of nonas in the back, and they have these cast iron skillets. There's like this team of black.
There's a bunch of what in the back?
Nonas, like Italian
nonas.
Grandmothers.
Okay, right.
You know, and they're all kind of, and they've got these skillets, and they're all of the same vintage, the skillets and the nonas, and they're just like this total. It's like an incredible operation.
And where is it? It's
Claremont runs north off of Dundas, where the 7-Eleven is, just down that way.
Yeah.
And it's one block north of Dundas.
Oh, it's not far. Okay, that's not far.
Yeah, it's pretty close. awesome.
Oh, okay.
We could all walk over after.
Okay, so now we know where to... Okay, yes, yes.
What do you drink with it?
What do you have to drink?
Almost always a Bria.
A Bria, yeah. Yeah, sure. That's yes. That just... Yeah. Yes, yes, you meant. Why did your dad's family leave France?
They didn't want to get killed. No, I mean, they were like the Nazis. My dad's dad lived in Paris, and he was the proprietor of a little newspaper, and they just knew that shit was coming, and it was better to get out. They were Jewish.
They were Jewish. Good, they?
Right. Yeah, yeah. Did I leave that out?
Wow. Your family.
Fuck.
Many families who fled Europe aren't like incredibly quick to admit that on stage in a room full of people. Like,
you never know, right?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, they were, all right. Okay, so there we go. So they were the smart people who left Europe at the good time. Do you think that is like a quintessentially Torontonian food?
I think it's possible. Because I haven't actually encountered it anywhere else, but I don't know. It could be. Yeah.
Sheila and I were on our way up thinking about the fact that we were wondering if there was like a food that was that could be thought of as quintessentially Torontonian, and we couldn't think of one, but that veal sandwich might be pretty close.
No, I think it could be close, and I think someone's made the case. Like, I think I don't recall exactly who, but I remember someone making that argument.
Except that was like that could be
for like the quintessential Toronto street food.
Because I don't think we're known for anything worldwide. I don't think that there's a food that like Montreal smoked meat or poutine from Quebec. Like, there's no one's like, oh, I want some of that Toronto chicken breast sandwich. Like, no one's like, you know, I want some.
No, it's true.
But maybe that could be...
Well, we could, I mean, it would be a divisive campaign if you wanted to start that. Like, the campaign to make...
I don't care.
No.
I'm not afraid.
You haven't had one. Have you had one?
A veal sandwich? What, you think I'm a moron? Of course I've had a veal sandwich. Why did you assume I didn't have a veal sandwich?
You hadn't been to California, so I just thought...
No, I have been. I remember the old place at Queen and Bathurst. I used to go there, and I've been to the place college, and I've had a lot. I've had a lot of veal sandwiches. Yeah, no, they're wonderful. It's one of the best things. I've had veal. Do you ever think about when you hear about that the when they're always talking about like the scientists wanting to grow the meat in labs?
Yeah.
Would that be maybe the perfect veal sandwich? Because that almost seems more veal-like than veal itself. You know what I mean? Like, you just have this, like, tissue in a thing, and it doesn't even get to have a mother. Like, it's just like this meat, and I bet it is not tough, because it is the opposite of, like, free running.
I think if you're of the school that it's the experience of the eating that matters, not the provenance, then I think there's a case to be made for the petri dish veal.
But are you not at that school? Are you like, no, I need the suffering? Like, that's part of the deliciousness lies in the suffering? Or?
Actually, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, no, it is, because it's, I don't know. I have to think about that. It's, like, I mean, obviously, the idea of food, like, in all seriousness, the idea of food from a petri dish is kind of gross and scary.
And that's grosser and scary to you than, like,
the horrible
suffering.
Of course that's gross and scary, too. Okay, I don't know. I can't, like I say, it's sort of the indefensible, but it's not a rational thing.
Right, people have been doing it for a long time. At least it's like normal. It's a normal version.
Yeah, like, so in sort of 300 years hence, when we're sort of inured to petri dish meat, and you know, my descendants are having a trampling hall defending their taste for like petri dish sandwiches or whatever. It'll be like a long standing tradition and somehow sanctified. Maybe that's, I don't know.
I look forward. Maybe we'll end just looking forward to that day. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Gabe Gonda, ladies and gentlemen. Trampoline Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Heady and is hosted by me. This episode's lecturer was selected by Sheila Heady. The podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Matt Smith. Trampoline Hall is a Sumo audio podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also find us on Twitter and Facebook. If you enjoyed the podcast, why not leave a review on iTunes? It really helps us out a lot. Also, Sumo Audio has another great podcast. It's about chips. It's called JustChips.com. You might want to check that out, too. I am Misha Globerman, and thanks for listening.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.